بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سليمان ابن عبد الملك is one of the Khalifas of the Banu Umayyah. After Muawiyah radiallahu anhu, you had the Banu Umayyah, and as the Khilafat had ended, was the Khilafat of the Abbasi Khalifas. So, perhaps it was Sulaiman ibn Abd al-Malik. Many of them were more materialistic. They had a fikr of the akhirat, but many of them were drawn towards pleasure, comforts, etc. So as Sulaiman bin Abd al-Malik is on the throes of death, about to leave, so it was Haywa, can't remember the other name, that explained to him, see, you spend your life in this and you didn't leave a very good example, but you must do something to compensate for all the past. Now you're towards your end and you messed it up already, so do something at least that can compensate for all the past. Because you know you're on your way out. You already can see the age, you're ripe, and there isn't the chance for you to live for too long. 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, but you won't last very long. So he says to him that, all right, be more specific, what should I do? So my suggestion is that you appoint Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah alayh as your successor. So how can that happen? Because there's a succession plan. From me it must move to my child, and so forth and so on. So now forget all that now. You just do what I'm telling you. If you want a compensation for all the past, you caused it, and you know you caused it big way. So do the compensation also, compensate in the right way. And with some persuasion, he conformed, he agreed. But then you get that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah alayh. In his heyday, he had the amount of wealth he had. Today the world has to dream about that wealth. So much of wealth. Where his clothes were washed, you know, the washerman will say that our clothes should be washed on the same stone, because that rich perfume that used to come out, you know, will last in our clothes. It's something for us to dream about. Nobody can afford that amount and that quality. Nobody can afford it. If he's walking through a street, you'll make out that Umar ibn Abdul Aziz had walked out. The clothing that he used to be wearing was the finest clothing. Get one cloth, something finer, something better, and the best. You can't find anything that will excel. Then he was like in a royal triangle. Father-in-law is a king, wife is a princess, brother-in-law is also a king. So all around he's covered. So the amount of wealth that he was enjoying. But then the moment he was put onto the position of Khilafat, it was a total revolution in his life. Young, maybe just around 40 or so, and he's appointed as the Khalifa. His wife Fatima used to say that if you talk about taqwa, then if you talk about righteousness and ibadat, then I've seen many people. But if you talk about taqwa, then I haven't seen a person like my husband. From the day he's appointed to the Khalifa, around 39, 40, till he passed away, about 2 or 3 years that he was the Khalifa, then he didn't need to take a farz ghusl. And that whole night used to be turning around. Allah, what must I do? How can I get this thing right? How am I sort it out? The whole night used to be in that concern, that frame of mind. So all the historians are all unanimous that he was the first mujaddid of this ummat. First mujaddid. Just as his great-grandfather was responsible, Umar radiallahu anhu was his great-grandfather. Just as he was responsible to put the Quran Sharif in one place, and then to bring all the hadith in one book was the job of Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullahi, first mujaddid of the zamana. One person, muhaddis, his name is Majishun, that's his name. So he was just, he went into a unconsciousness. People thought that he was dead. Came up again. One, two times it happened. They nearly take him to do the start of the ghusl, but he got up again. As he got up, so they asked what happened. So no, what happened was that my soul was taken, right, to the seventh heaven, and then just announced that, no, this person is not yet dead. Take him back. So as I was coming down, somewhere I came into the assembly of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And I see that Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam is seated there, and Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah alayhi is seated very closely to Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So I expressed my surprise. I know that Shaykhain Abu Bakr and Umar are the closest. But how come Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah has got such a close rank? So there's no doubt about these people's position. They are the greatest. But in one respect, what he has achieved, nobody has achieved. Because in the time of the Shaykhain, Abu Bakr and Umar, Islam was still flourishing. They had to just see that it's in order, to continue managing it. But this Umar ibn Abdul Aziz, the whole thing had turned around. The whole thing had turned around. To restore the whole thing was a real effort. So in that respect, now he has enjoyed this position. So the Ummah called him also Al-Khalifatul Khamis, the fifth Khalifa. Therefore, all the Muhaddisin and Ulama agreed that to show love and respect to Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah alayhi is a sign of good, sound Iman. And if a person is disorientated, is turned away from Umar ibn Abdul Aziz rahmatullah alayhi, then he's a suspect. His Iman is suspect. So he's at such a level. So this bequest, you see this bequest that Sulaiman ibn Abdul Malik made, and that acted as a compensation for his past. But he scored very well. All his life, it was all in masti and susti. And then, how he scored? Although he had to take it against his own child, own family, and own comforts and all that, but the way he compensated, bequesting, كُتِبَ عَلَيْكُمْ إِذَا حَضَرَ أَحَدَكُمُ الْمَوْتُ إِنْ تَرَكَ خَيْرَنِ الْوَصِيَّةِ When death approaches a person, so he is prescribed for him that he makes out a bequest. So this ayat came around before the ayat about tying up of estates. You wind up in a state. So in the winding up of an estate, shares, etc., are all being prescribed, all ordained. Son will get so much, daughter will get this much, father will get so much, the wife will get so much, the husband will get this much. All the shares are stipulated. So even if someone died interstate, but the shares are all stipulated, there's no problem, right? Although you're living in a kafir country, so you have to make provisions because the laws are going all against you. You have to make provisions that it's distributed correctly. But otherwise, in an Islamic state, you don't need to make a proper will that how must your estate be distributed, right? So, when the Quran speaks about wasiyat, making up a bequest, right? So, like I said before, it wasn't the law about winding up of a state. So, a man needed to make out a bequest for his father, for his parents, الوالدين والأقربين, and for the relatives. Thereafter, the verse about winding up of estates had come up, and as a result, this verse was all then cancelled. But nonetheless, a person still has the right to make a bequest from one third of his wealth for all people that are not his heirs. His heir, then they've got shares that are stipulated, so he's not going to make any additional will for them. فَمَنْ خَافَ مِنْ مُوسٍ جَنَفًا أَوْ إِثْمًا فَأَصْلَحَ بَيْنَهُمْ. Now, as long as the person that is making out the bequest, the testator, as long as he's alive, right, he can make a change to his own bequest. My own bequest, I can make a change, I can make an amendment, I can make an adjustment. So long as he's alive. But once he's dead, then no changes can be made. But there's one exception. فَمَنْ بَدَّلَهُ بَعْدَ مَا سَمِعَهُ فَإِنَّمَا إِثْمُهُ عَلَى الَّذِينَ يُبَدِّلُونَ فَمَنْ خَافَ مِنْ مُوسٍ جَنَفًا أَوْ إِثْمًا فَأَصْلَحَ بَيْنَهُمْ. But if you are afraid that the testator made a mess up, right? He did something wrong. For example, this person is not the creditor, right? So I'm going to favor him. I say, no, he is a creditor. So I got 10 million, I want to give away 1 million. I'm going to give him 1 million, then the rest of the heirs are going to suffer. So now I know that this person is prejudicing. He's wrongly attributing this debt to himself. He's wrongly doing it. Because he wants to prejudice them and favor this person here. So if someone is absolutely certain that this person has faulted, even after his death, you can bring about a correction. Or for example, he wants to do something additional for one child, whereas the child's share is stipulated, whether it's a son or a daughter, and he wants to make a provision for the son or for the daughter, right? Shares are all stipulated. Son will get so much, the daughter will get so much, all stipulated, right? Now when it's stipulated that he wants to give something addition to one son, but in the process he will prejudice others, so you know that he's doing something wrong. As you come, as the man passed away, the testator died, now you're handling the whole estate, you're managing it, you're the executor, and you correct the thing, then there's no guna for that. Because you bring about a correction, otherwise the wealth would be wrongly distributed. فَمَنْ بَدَّلَهُ بَعْدَ مَا سَمِيَهُ. In the next verse, Allah Ta'ala speaks about Roza and لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ. This has been prescribed, why? That you learn the lesson of restraint. So this morning I was thinking, you know, this lesson of restraint is such a dynamic lesson, that if you just understand the philosophy of restraint, that restraint brings about happiness in life. Restraint brings about a direction in life. Restraint brings about value in life. Right? Restraint brings about the happiness in life. That is restraint. No restraint, there's no value, there's no respect, there's no direction, absolutely nothing. There's no restraint. So that restraint brings about the value in life. Right? Allah Hamid Sahib Rahmatullah Ali has given an incident, you know, restraint. He says, like we have the Sheikh and the Murid, you know. So the Hindus have a Guru and the Chela. So the Chela is telling the Guru, you know, you must go to live in this town here. Because everything is going for a song. Anything you talk of, you know, anything you talk about, everything is 1 riyal. You know, in Saudi you get that 1 riyal shop. Anything you talk about a Mercedes, you talk about a bicycle, 1 riyal is going. So what's better than living in such a place? Everything 1 riyal, going for 1 riyal. So the Guru is explaining his chela by, you know, looks like these people don't have any value system. When they don't have a value system, then it's dangerous. Because you also won't have a value there. Where there's a value system, then everything is falling in place. But there's absolutely no value, then you don't stand a chance there. Chela is telling that Guru, hey, you know, let's go, man. Enjoy, see, mitais and burfis and lint chocolate and what, everything 1 riyal. Everything is 1 riyal. Let's go, man. Let's enjoy. So with a lot of persuasion, the Guru said, gave in. Alright. So anyway, and he gave in, now they're eating very well, all the mitais, all the chocolates, burfis and sudarfini and everything. Now they became nice and fat and plump, both of them, the guru and the chela. So as they're going for a stroll, sometime in the afternoon, they go across the marketplace and they see a big judicial procession. The whole town is there, and there's a judicial. So it caught their attention, they went and seen what's going on. So what had gone on there was that one person complained, see, my brother was walking past and the wall collapsed on him and he died. That was the complaint. So the judge said, alright, then let's summon the builder. So the builder is summoned. See, you didn't erect the wall correctly. When you didn't correct the wall correctly, his brother was going past, although he had the intention to steal there. He was wanting to scale over the wall, but that thing collapsed over him and he died. So, because you didn't erect the wall correctly, that thing collapsed on him, he died, so we have to charge you. You'll have to be killed. Life for life. So the builder says, no, it's not my problem, you see. What happened was that they were mixing that mortar, daga we say, they're mixing that mortar, and the person that was adding the water, he added more water than he was supposed to be adding. So that mortar didn't come like it's supposed to be. It was a little bit weak. And if it was weak, then that wall didn't come out right, and therefore it collapsed. So anyway, they called that person who was pouring the water. He is the culprit now, because he poured more water than was required. Because of him, the wall collapsed. So they called him in. Called him in and said, no, it's not my fault. See what happened? See, as that water was, he has to pour that water, right? Then that animal shrieked. When that animal shrieked, then more water was poured than was required. So they called that person of, you know, that animal and the driver of the animal, they called him in. Well, you see, you were supposed to be looking after, controlling the water. And this is what happened, your mistake, and this person died. So they called him in, said, no, it's not my fault. It's the fault of that woman that was walking past. When she was walking past, then her bangles were ringing, you see. When the bangles were ringing, so that animal got a little bit shaken up. When the animal got shaken up, then he poured more water than was required. So they call that person, that woman now. The woman says, not my fault, the jeweler made it. So they call the jeweler. Now that thing had to stop at some point. At some point they had to stop it. Now the jeweler, unfortunately, had to catch it. Because why did he make the jewelry such? That thing was ringing, that thing disturbed the animal, the driver of it had to pour more water than was required, the motor was not right, this man died. So anyway, now, they are lowering that rope onto the neck of the jeweler. Now the jeweler is thin, frail, that the rope is not coming upright. So, it's not coming upright, so the king announced, you know what, this thing is not working out because this thing is not going into his neck like it's how it's supposed to be. So they're looking in the crowd, if there's any suitable candidate that the rope could get into. So they found that chela was the most suitable candidate, because he was already nice and fat and plump. That string was going right exactly, so he'll be the right candidate. Anyway, so now the chela is telling the murid, he's telling his guru, hey, meto mara, I'm going to die now, finish now, I had it now. Who is saying? Chela is saying, the guru, I'm going to die now. So the guru said, I told you from in advance, I told you, that people that don't have any values, no system, they don't have any system, then there's not going to be any system, that you're not supposed to be in such a place. But you didn't listen to me, you wanted to be here, now see now the consequence. So the chela said, whatever happened, happened, that's history now. But now, jaan ko bachao, jaan par aaya hai, you have to save my life. So the guru worked out a plan with the chela. So the rope is coming down, so the chela and the guru are fighting now. Chela is saying, come on to my neck, And the guru is saying, no, it's on my neck. And they're fighting it out. Now the king is observing, hey, what's this now? You know, everybody escapes death. Yeah, he's looking forward. The guru is looking forward to the death. And the chela is looking forward to the death. So they ask, hey, what's your problem? What are you looking for? He said, no, that's the secret. No, you have to divulge the secret. What happened? So the guru said, you see, I just looked at my stars now. And my stars are telling that whoever dies at this moment, he's going straight to Jannat, you know. So the king said, hey, rather I take it. فَقُتِيَ دَابِرُ الْقَوْمِ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا وَالْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. See this, no system, there's no value, there's no direction, there's not going to be any pleasure in life. So if you want that pleasure in life, you want that direction, then that comes with restraint. Now when you talk of restraint in Islam, then restraint is in three levels, right? At three levels. The first level of restraint is get your mind restrained from all type of wrong beliefs and wrong thoughts. Any wrong belief, then put a restraint order on your mind against all wrong beliefs. Reject it. So that is now the elementary, the entry level. The entry level of restraint is your mind must be clear of wrong and corrupt beliefs. Whether it's the belief in Allah Ta'ala, whether it's the belief on the Malaika, whether it's the belief on the Anbiya alayhi salam, whether it's the belief on the day of Qiyamah, so all type of corrupt beliefs, then you need to clear your mind. وَمَا يُؤْمِنُ أَكْثَرُونَ بِاللَّهِ إِلَّا وَهُمْ مُشْرِكُونَ. Most people, they make shirk. They say we are mu'min. But that iman has got a mixture of shirk. So the shirk Allah doesn't accept. The Christian is saying Isa alayhi salam is the son of God, or he's saying he's God, one of the two. He's making shirk, he's involved. The Jew is also saying something similar. Uzairun ibn Allah. He's saying that Uzair is the son of Allah Ta'ala. So they all scrapped. The whole faith has been scrapped. لَقَدْ كَفَرَ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا. Allah is declaring their kufr, finished. Call. So, your belief in the oneness of Allah Ta'ala must be right. Belief in the Anbiya must be right. The belief in the Anbiya, that's also corrupt. He's saying that Nabi is the son of Allah Ta'ala. And na'uzu billah, the Jew is saying that Nabi, na'uzu billah, a million times over, is an illegitimate product. Right. So he went to one extreme, he went to another extreme. Both of them went off, completely off. So the belief in the Anbiya is wrong. Then the belief in the Malaika is also wrong. مَنْ كَانَ عَدُوًا لِلَّهِ وَمَلَائِكَتِهِ وَرُسُولِهِ وَجِبْرِيلَ وَمِكَالِ. So when the Jews had heard that Jibreel Islam brings about the wahi, right, so they said, هُوَ عَدُوُنَا. He is our enemy. Because he was the one that brought all these trials onto the Jews. So he's our enemy. So the belief in Allah Ta'ala must be right, the belief in the Anbiya must be right, the belief in the Malaika must be right, the belief in the Day of Qiyamah must be right. The belief in the Day of Qiyamah also is corrupt. Because they said that the Day of Qiyamah, لَيَدْخُلَ الْجَنَّةَ إِلَّا مَنْ كَانَ هُودًا أَوْ نَصَارًا. You have to be a Jew or a Christian to get into Jannah. So the belief in the hereafter is also wrong. Absolutely, all corrupt, all gone. See? Allah Ta'ala's protection and safety is on a system for a limited time. When the time expired, now the same product that was meant to be a safety, now is going to be fatal, right? It's going to kill you. The medication, before the expiry date, it will give you that guarantee, it will give you that relief. But after that expiry date, now it can be fatal, now it can kill you. So Christianity in its own day was a prescription for safety. But after the expiry date, now it's fatal. Now it's dangerous, it'll destroy you. Same with Judaism, same with every other ism besides Islam. The only religion that has been guaranteed by Allah Ta'ala that it will remain right till the end, إِنَّ الدِّينَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ الْإِسْلَامِ. So Allah ruled out, مَنْ يَبْتَغِ غَيْرَ الْإِسْلَامِ. You're going to look for anything else, you're gone. akhirati min al-khasirin, you have failed, khas. In clear, open terms, anything besides Islam, you are a failure. So the only way to come on is to conform with Islamic belief. So the first restraint is on your belief. All type of isms will come, thoughts will come, everything will come, but you rejecting it. No, I don't subscribe to this. I don't subscribe. And the simple thing for people like us, this Allama Razi rahmatullah alayhi, right? He's a philosopher of the time. I mean, talk of philosophers now, they're like our science, the scientists of the day. For everything, they want to look for a reason, and reason, and reason. Reason and counter-reason, right? So in that they get all entangled. Because your reason can reach to a certain point, it can't go beyond that point. Right? You can say, alright, you have legitimate product, right? But ask, what's the proof? Can you prove it? Huh? Or you say, or legitimate product, right? So no, I can't DNA that thing. But I say, your father, was he a legitimate product? Mother was legitimate. So at some point, you know, just leave this thing here. Don't talk this thing. Don't talk about this thing. At some point, you have to just cut it off. Why? Because it relates to your integrity. Your integrity is such that you don't want anybody to discuss this thing. Just leave it at that point. You don't want your mind also to talk to you about these type of matters. You want to just cut that off. So the same with faith. At a certain point, you have to say that I can't understand things beyond this. It's beyond my understanding. Why must I pretend to say, no, no, I understand everything and I need to have an explanation to everything and anything? Why must we pretend? So this Allama Razi, now he's a philosopher of the time. And he had some ta'alluq with the Shaykh. But he didn't have the right ta'alluq. In other words, he didn't disrespect, but he didn't follow right through. But anyway, now he's on the throw of death. His Shaykh is Najmuddin Kubra rahmatullah alayh. His Shaykh is getting his wudu done. The Khadim is helping him to pour the water. He must be old now, so he's pouring water. As he's pouring water, the Khadim is noticing that he's going on washing his hand. And his hand is not just getting washed. So the Shaykh seems to be very seriously looking in one direction and he's just going on washing the hand. The Khadim doesn't have the courage to ask him, what's your problem? You know, you wash more than three times, what's your problem? Doesn't have the heart to ask him. Anyway, some time passed in this manner, 8 or 10 minutes passed in this manner. So now the Shaykh took out his sapat, you know, his champal, and he threw it in one direction. And he's saying, keh do is khabis ko, ke main bira dalil ke khuda ke upar iman le aata hu. See the shaitan, I believe in Allah Ta'ala. I don't need to have a proof in believing in Allah Ta'ala. In the meanwhile, it surfaced later on that was the time that Allama Razi was just dying. Now, on the throes of death, Shaitan is coming and harassing him. What's your proof for this? So he's putting up his proof. One proof, and the second proof, and the third argument, and the fourth argument. Now, he showed about 99 arguments. And he's afraid now that I have just about 100 arguments, and 99 arguments Shaitan has just broken. Now what will happen to me? So when the Shaykh realized it's all his arguments, all he's exhausted for his arguments, so he conveyed a message now that Murid is lying somewhere else. Allah Ta'ala allowed it. You know, you say karamat. Allah Ta'ala allowed it that his voice must be traveled to that place and he must hear this. So at the deathbed he's saying, to Shaitan, I believe in Allah Ta'ala, I don't need any proof in believing in Allah Ta'ala. I believe is untainted, uncontaminated, I don't need any proof. Why must we pretend everything? I must find an argument, I must find a counter argument. Shaitan is talking to the same Allama Razi, says, whose iman is stronger, yours or this villager here? So that Allama Razi is saying, obviously mine, because I am such a great expert, I specialize in everything, iman, all these things, philosophy and the sciences. My iman is much stronger. Uski iman to taqleedi hai. He has just inherited iman. And I have researched iman. So the research is greater than the inherited. So Shaitan tells him, your iman has busted up just now. But whose iman is strong is his religious. What's your proof? So they took him to that village, both went, Allah Marazi, Shaitan. How many Allah Ta'ala won? What's your proof? So the villager said, you see this chopper I got? This chopper, I'll bust your head. You just say, there's more than one Allah, I'll bust your head. So Shaitan is saying, Allah Marazi, aise logo se kaise lad sakte hai? How can you fight with them? You to marne jeene ke upar aa jaate hai. You want to talk with them, they want to bust you up. How are you going to fight them? With you people, I can pull you into an argument. And I'm Shaitan. I'm living for thousands of years. So all the philosophers and the scientists, all the arguments that they had, I've all accumulated it. And I know how to counter them. But these people, like you just talk to them and they want to bust you. So how are you going to fight with these people? So the simplest thing with Iman, without any proof, counter reasoning, I just believe. Khalas. Full stop. You don't show your intelligence. In the presence of Allah, they don't show intelligence. So, I got a limit. I can just manage to this point here, and I can't go beyond that point. So the order of restraint first is in your faith. Then, the second order of restraint is in your deeds. Right? Do this, don't do this. This is haram, this is halal. Right? So, in this order of restraint, as far as your application is concerned, you had two extremes. Right? One was the Christian, he went on one extreme, he went. He became nuns and became monks. So all the pleasures of life they declared as forbidden. وَرَهْبَانِيَةً ابْتَدَعُوهَا مَا كَتَبْنَاهَا لِهِ This monasticism that they ordained upon themselves, Allah Ta'ala didn't ordain it. They brought it upon themselves. But then they couldn't fulfill it how they're supposed to be fulfilling it. They were made nikah haram, they forbidden. Good, enjoyable food, they made it all forbidden. Every type of comfort, they went and declared it as forbidden upon themselves. They took to the mountains, to the caves and all that. But then, they did not show the respect as they're supposed to be showing the respect. Because as they went into this, then people became affected. Hey, you know that Buzruk there in that mountain? He is only in Ibadat and Zikr. All the time, Zikr and Fikr, nothing else he's got in life. So now, you heard about it, you took your son there, make dam upon him, make fukam upon him, give me some dam water. So they started attracting people. When they went on their own, isolated, what happened? People were attracted. People were attracted, now you're taking your child. So something happened, something worked for someone. So he gave him some gifts here, gifts there. Then they began to trust them with their daughters. And then they caused it. The nuns caused it, and the monks also caused it. And you look at the ancient history, both of them caused it. They went and started something off, but they couldn't maintain it afterwards. وَرَهْبَانِيَةً ابْتَدَعُوهَا مَا كَتَبْنَاهَا عَلَيْهِمْ إِلَّا ابْتِغَاءَ رِضْوَانِ اللَّهِ فَمَا رَأَوْهَا حَقَّ رِعَايَتِهَا So our Buzugan al-Din, they didn't want this. That to live a life in isolation, that you will attract people, right? And people begin to respect you unnecessarily. And you can become bloated. So the easier way is live with people, but remain with your taqwa. Put all that restraint in spite of you living amongst people. So one extreme was to just abandon everything. The other extreme was to get yourself drowned in all the pleasures. To be indiscriminate, any haram and every haram. Like how the world is going in this day and time. Every haram they tested out. Woman on woman, men on men, 3-4 people all together, like monkeys, right? What they call tri whatever. So every type of pleasure they're experimenting. Every type of pleasure. Man becoming woman, woman becoming man, 3-4 people in bed one time. What things they are thinking of, you know, I don't think animals also think like that. I can't imagine even animals behaving like that. So every type of pleasure they're trying to experiment. So this group of people went into the other extreme. So one went one extreme, one went into the other extreme. So Islam says this, you will practice restraint. You won't abandon completely, you won't abandon the comforts completely. And you won't drown yourself in comforts entirely. You won't abandon entirely, and you won't drown yourself. You're going to drown yourself now, you got drunken with pleasure, drunken with wealth. When you're drunken in wealth, then you can't discriminate haram from halal. You can't see right from wrong. How are you going to discriminate? How are you going to see it? So you're drunken already. Now money begins to rule your life. So whatever you have to use, whatever you have to spend to attract that wealth, you must do it. You use woman to get it, you have to use name to do it, haram, halal, whatever, whichever way you're going to attract that wealth, you must attract that wealth. But that money you must get. So are you drunken? When you're drunken, then you'll use anything to get that figure. So Islam says that you use the pleasure, but within restrain. Yes, woman is permissible for you, you'll get into nikah. And this is how you'll go about doing it. That good food is permissible for you, that enjoyment is permissible for you, you have to ensure that you made sabah. You ensure that you got the wealth right. Doesn't mean you made zabah of any salah. You made zabah of that thing, but you acquired that wealth in an incorrect manner. You stole it, you were dishonest, you cheated someone, you let down someone. You made zabah correctly, but how you've acquired that wealth. So you have to check at two levels. That is zabah, that you slaughtered the animal correctly, and you acquired that wealth also correctly. Now, it's kulu minat tayyibati wa amalu saliyan. Kulu mimma razakakum law halalan tayyiba. It's halal also, and it's pure, it's uncontaminated. So you see the two extremes. So the second level is on your amal, on your deeds. Everything will be told, you restrain. And this is so easily, you understand it, you restrain, there's going to be enjoyment. I ask you, if there's no restrain order on the motorists, right, in the lane that they are driving, on the speed that they are driving, no restrain, what happened to the traffic? There must be a restrain on the lane and on the speed that they are traveling. Don't you put a restrain? So, when there's a restrain on that, then the traffic moves so nicely, so well. Right? Everybody moves, everybody's happy, everybody's comfortable. Everybody reaches the destination. But if there's no restrain on the speed, there's no restrain on the lane that you have to drive, there's going to be a total chaos. One person is dying now, another person is dying. Nobody can enjoy the road. There's a restrain on your woman, right? When there's a restraint on your woman, so your woman are safe. Otherwise, there's no restraint. He is coming to rape this one here, he is doing this to this person, he is doing that. There's no restraint. When there's no restraint, then everybody is trying to enjoy and fulfill his lust in any way that he wants. But there's a restraint. This is halal, this is haram. You're going to live within the parameter. Living with the within the parameter, there's joy, there's happiness for everybody, for you and for the people all around. Your wife is in respect, your daughters are respected, your children, your immediate and external people, all are respected. But the secret of all this is that live within restraint. Don't go out of the restraint. The parameter of restraint, don't move out of it. So you see, this restraint brings about the joy. Acquiring wealth, again restraint. You can't be indiscriminate about acquiring wealth. Anyhow, every way, use this influence, bluff that person, cheat this person here, be dishonest to that person, make up a story. I got that wealth. But have I acquired that wealth in a halal, tayyib manner? You know, one is halal. One is pure. Had I used some influence, the father was supposed to be sharing his wealth equally, right? Supposed to be giving it equally to all his children, right? But now, someone used the influence. Used the influence and he swung towards one person. What this person has got, there's not going to be any barakat in that. He may have got so much, right? But is there going to be barakat in that? You use your influence somehow, you turn his arm and whatever you did, no, I'm doing your khidmat and all that, and you're not seeing me favorably, right? So you swung him on your side, you got a little bit more stakes on your side, but I ask you now, are you going to enjoy that? Is there going to be any barakat in that wealth? The barakat is lost. So the opportunity of doing work, the acceptance of work is going to be lost. What's the fayda? Kya fayda mera? You got so much, but Allah says, I don't want to see you, I don't want to see your wealth. I don't need your wealth. Each time you are trying, and Allah says, I don't want that wealth. You try again, I don't want that wealth. Because you rob this person here, you suppress that person here, you put up a story here. As a result now, you brought about a severance within your own ranks. So, why must I accept your wealth? I don't need this. The whole world, machinery is to try you out. That what level of restraint are you going to exercise? And you failed in that level of restraint. You just wanted things to work out for you. You were not concerned about that person, and the third person, and the fourth person. So you can stuff your wealth. Keep it to yourself. I don't need it. Now you got that wealth, you're doing this thing here, you're doing that, some other Islamic cause. But Allah said, I don't need your wealth. Kya fayda? Imagine you come home, and the best of gifts you present to your wife is, I don't need it. I'm comfortable, I don't need you. How do you feel? Came home and you wanted someone to give some attention. I don't need you. I don't love you. I don't need you. How do you feel? So If Allah Pak were to tell you the same thing, I don't need you, I don't love you anymore, how do you feel? So, you see, it's application, whether it's in wealth, whether it's in social relationship, at any level of relationship, but this restraint has to be applied. And the restraint brings about that happiness, that enjoyment. No restraint, there's no enjoyment. Hazrat Rahmatullah gave an incident. He says, some of you may have seen the Jama Masjid in Delhi, right? So, the Jama Masjid, I think the whole of Delhi is about the biggest. Take, the capacity is about 100,000, 120,000. That's the capacity. So it's got different entrances on the east and the west. So on the east, eastern entrance, as the people are leaving the Jummah Namaz, one person is there near the entrance, and he is saying out that tu mera rab nahi, me tera gulam nahi, to me teri baat ko kyu manu? You're not my rab, and I'm not your slave, so why must I listen to you? People are coming out of the masjid, everybody is saying, ye kafir ho gaya, he's a kafir. How can he say such a thing? That you're not my Rabb, and I'm not your slave, and why must I listen to you? You're not my Rabb, and I'm not your slave, so why must I listen to you? In the meanwhile, after about a couple of good thousand people had left, one person, some sense and some understanding he's got, so he says, bhai, isko poochho, ye kisse baat kar raha hai? Ask him, who is he addressing? Who is he talking to? So this person here, he says, afsos ki baat hai, ke puri Delhi mein ek hi hoshyar aadmi nikal aaya. So what a pity, in the whole Delhi, is just one intelligent person. In the whole Delhi, is just one intelligent person. Really, who I'm talking to, I'm addressing myself. Because my nafs wants this mitai, and this type of luxury, and that type of comfort. So I'm telling my nafs that I can't afford these type of things, right? I've got a family, I've got a wife, I've got children, I'm going to enjoy all these things here, I can't afford it. My nafs is saying, no, you must have it. So I'm shouting my nafs, you are my God, I'm not your slave, I don't have to listen to you. You are my God, I'm not your slave, then why must I listen to you? So we understand that nafs that is still in the process of rectification and correction, you have to keep reprimanding it. You don't just give in to your nafs. You put that order of restraint. To the extent that you put that order of restraint, the life will become enjoyable. Because the restraint was for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. There's not for any personal reason, not for any personal gain. For the sake of Allah Ta'ala, you put on the order of restraint on yourself. Now your life will have some meaning. It will have some direction, it will have some enjoyment. So, restrain first in the belief, restrain at the second level on your application, amal, the deeds, right? On Qurayshi Buzurg, Quraysh. Qurayshi means he's got a background of being a Qurayshi, right? So, he's young, 25 years of age, 26 years of age. And he's a Buzurg now, and we're all Murids, but he's very young. But in the meanwhile, he's got some type of psoriasis, whole body, head to the toe, psoriasis he got. And you know, if someone has it in a bad way, it can be very difficult for him. And one person came here, he had that same, very wealthy person, but he had psoriasis. So as he came to sit down near me, so he had to put a towel under. And he sat down. As he's sitting now, that thing is scaling or falling down. So it can be so miserable, right? So this Buzurg was there. He's a Buzurg, but he's got this psoriasis, that thing is just falling, just dropping. So his Murids are telling him, you know, you must get married. So no, I don't want to spoil someone's life. Now see this Buzurg, these people of the past, they were so considerate. Now he's got hundreds and thousands of followers, and they are telling him, you know, you must get married. He was all right, organized, he could have said that. But he understands in the heart of heart that I'm going to hurt someone else's daughter. I will enjoy because I'm young, I've got the strength, I've got the energy, but that person's daughter is going to be in a problem. How can I let someone else's daughter suffer because of my comfort? Hazrat Tanvi Sahib Rahmatullah was very much disturbed. One person, from birth, is important, absolutely important. His wife died. But very wealthy, he sent a proposal accepted. Ma says, hey, what a merciless person this person is. This young girl gets into his marriage, but he's got absolutely no strength. Why did he do such a thing? He's destroying her life. And she will feel embarrassed to talk about this thing. Obviously, it's coming from a respectable family. To talk about this type of thing, she'll feel very, very embarrassed. But now I need someone to make my rotis, make tarkari, and press my feet and all that. Now, he is not worried about anything. What he's worried about is personal pleasure. Now, in that zamana, I brought someone in my life, I must be comfortable, that person must be comfortable. And that concept goes out of your life, then you are only self-centered. I must be comfortable, that person, whatever can happen to him, must happen to him, but I must be comfortable. So this Qurayshi Buzug is, I can't get married. And they're insisting you must get married. No, I can't. I don't want to spoil someone else's. It's his daughter. And she will feel, she'll see this, she'll feel nauseated. How she'll see me? Anyway, after some much persuasion, one murid came up and said, I explained my daughter the whole story. That this is your position. Exactly, I told her. And she says, no, she wants to be in your khidmat. She wants to be in your khidmat, serve you. I've explained to her the whole thing. But you told him how bad it is. Yeah. I told her everything. Anyway, now everything is clear and she's insisting that she wants to be there. Right? Now see where it's coming from? She knows what it is and she's insisting that she wants to be in this Buzurg's khidmat. Now the nikah is done. When the nikah is done, now look at this selflessness. Allah Pak Hameh Bhi Manad. That we show that love and respect for other people more than we show consideration for ourselves. So, now as they came into seclusion, this girl is noticing that this person is absolutely fabulous man. He is so handsome, the shape, the complexion, the skin, refined, everything. There's no sign of any skin allergy. And my father spoke in Irish, so she turned around. What are you doing? I said, no. My father told me that this is the type of person I'm marrying. But I see you absolutely right, your complexion is right, your eyes are right. There's no sign of anything in your entire body. I'm looking at you from the top, looking at your feet. There's nothing, absolutely nothing. So my father has misled me. So now I am that very person. This Buzurg is saying, I am that very person. But before I could come into seclusion with you, so I cried to Allah, this woman is making such a sacrifice for me. I don't have the heart to put this woman into any misery. So I begged Allah, I kept on begging Allah until this marriage. When she comes to me in seclusion, make me look absolutely fabulous, handsome, clean, so that this woman here that made this type of consideration for me, she also is comfortable. Now look at that ikhlas of this woman. This woman is couple of good degrees above the husband, although this is a buzurug, but she is couple of good degrees above that buzurug in her piety and her righteousness and her sincerity. She says that buzurug, you see what? I came into your marriage only because I wanted the sawab of the sabr, sawab of your khidmat. So if you want me to be remain in your marriage, you better reverse the whole dua. That you come in your original self. Otherwise, just count me out. Just get me out. But that Buzuru was forced to reverse the whole situation, came into that. But look at this people here. See, so application, restraint. Who doesn't want enjoyment? We want enjoyment for ourselves, our children, our dependents. All of us want that. But you see that restraint, in the restraint is the enjoyment. The restraint is that happiness. In the restraint is the direction. No restraint, absolute, there is no enjoyment. We think it's an imaginary thing in our minds, that no, I'll get this and I'll enjoy like this. But I say, there's no restraint, there's no enjoyment. How many minutes left for that? 6 minutes. Yeah. Let's ask, because there's two things that people are talking about this week here, right? One is Arab lands, whatever, and one is about clothing, right? But I can only finish up one subject. I'll just speak about the Arab lands only, right? There's a huge hue and cry everywhere from what's happening here, what's happening there, how can they do such a thing, how can they do such a thing. All right, to express your sentiments and to show a disagreement, right? it's a sign of iman that I disagree. That's a sign of iman, obviously. But just showing a disagreement is not sufficient. See, we're coming from a business background, so everything you want to see now, what business I can make out of this. Now first understand the position of the Haramain. The Haramain is the most central place for every Muslim. From the four farz, two farz is in this direction. Namaz, ask you one person, any Muslim, can he absolve himself from this direction? Every day, in fact all the times of the day and night, night, morning, afternoon, evening, at any time of the night or the day, he requires the Baytullah. He requires the Haramain, right? Is it a fact or not? Right? Your Hajj cannot be complete without this place here. Right? So the right thing to think is, the right thing to understand and think is, alright, in this whole thing, what's ever happening, right? How can I score, how can I gain some benefit out of this whole thing? I must gain some benefit, I must gain something out of the whole thing. Then, you know, I would like to hear, is there going to be any commitment? I'll make the tashkil, but there must be some commitment. At least give me some indication that you will at least commit yourselves. Because the investment I'm showing is too great. If the investment is great, then I need that type of response. So I know, right, I presented this whole thing here, and I'm getting that type of response, right? So, everybody wants that he must cash in, right? Because it's such a huge sawab. Every Muslim, every corner of the world, he requires this direction. Every day of his life, every moment of his life, right? Every person requires it. So now how do you invest in this place here? So at least for 10 minutes in the day, whichever time that you are totally in seclusion, you know, you got nothing interrupting you, nothing disturbing you. Nothing is disturbing you, nothing is interrupting you, nothing is distracting you. You're all by yourself at that time, 10 minutes. Just dedicate the 10 minutes to Allah Ta'ala only. And in that 10 minutes, if you can make 2 rakat of namaz, make 2 rakat of namaz. But then talk to Allah Ta'ala, beg Allah Ta'ala for the preservation, for the restoration, for the goodness of the Haramain. Good must be, it must be sent of all good. All type of good, all type of ibadat, all type of righteousness, all type of virtue. Virtue must just gush out of this place here. Right? Allah Ta'ala must make it happen. But 10 minutes, so Allah Ta'ala requires a certain degree of tears to reach him. And when that degree reaches his mark, when the tear reaches his mark, he will just turn a thing. When the tear, it reaches his mark, he will just turn a thing. He will just restore. Who can stop the plan of Allah Ta'ala? Who can prevent Allah Ta'ala? Can there be anybody, any force that can prevent Allah Ta'ala? But I ask you, if it is that it's your tear that brought about that level of acceptance, right? Then the good is going to flourish. Every person's namaz, I say, do you have a percentage in that or not? Every person's hajj and umrah, don't you have a share in it or not? Everybody's coming into these places here, don't you have a little bit of a percentage or something? 1%, 0.5%, 2%. But if it reaches the mark, if it comes right, right? Everything comes right, restored, peace, iman, Islam, you see righteousness flowing all around, right? Clothing is right, the order is right, the system is right, in this land here, right? So anything that would happen now, because your dua also was instrumental in bringing about that, so you're going to get some percentage.